My name is Randy Riggins. I'm the global missions pastor here at Rock Point. Been on staff for 11 years, preached off and on here for the last 11 years in different capacities, different times. You hit this moment of reflection when another child graduates and you just have a moment of looking back. And Riley, our daughter, graduated this month, and so it's like I'm thinking about that when I was preparing for this message, and I'm thinking about, wow, when we came to the church, she was like 7 years old or, you know, whatever, and then now I'm coming up on the stage. I don't even know if I'm worthy to be up here. I haven't bought my white pair of Air Force Ones. I mean, I'm not sure if I'm ready for this moment, not sure if I'm ready for another child graduated. I mean, that's a whole nother piece right there. You know, it's like, how in the world does that happen? How do our kids keep getting older and older and we don't? I don't know. I haven't figured that out yet, but it's a cool thing. graduation, right? That's a whole piece. I mean, that's a piece of like my history as a youth pastor. I think I've gone to more graduations over the course of my life, especially in a 20-year span, than most teachers do, because I would go to multiple ones of all of these kids and hear all of those inspirational messages over and over and over. And now I'm giving them, right? I spoke some, a little bit at least, on my sister, my daughter's graduation, and then I've got another graduation I'm speaking to later this summer. And so I'm in this graduation mode, listening, looking at things. You know, I saw this one quote from this one graduation speech. The person said, "I want to thank Google, Wikipedia, and whoever invented copy and paste." That's a good one. That's a good one. Here's this grad card. I like this grad card. Congratulations on getting through the easiest part of life. If you can't find that card, write that in something you're giving away to a party today or this week. I like this Evite that somebody gave. You know, graduation parties, that's a big deal right now. So this Evite, it just said, "I did it, I graduated, now I'm like smart and stuff." So that's kind of indicative of our culture. Parents throwing these grad parties to people that they love. Can I just maybe spark our thoughts and attentions for a moment about a reality that you may not have walked in thinking, and that is that you and I have a creator who loves us, and as a matter of fact, he believes in throwing a really great party that he's inviting you to. Your entire life, he has been giving you really, really great graduation gift cards. One after another, after another, after another. You received a gift card this morning of breath that invited you to wake up and experience this moment. And our response to him for all of that, what is it to be? It is to be, "Yes, yes, I agree, God. You are so incredibly lucky to have me. I couldn't agree with you more." Right? Right? Actually, it's just the opposite. It's the opposite. What we find in the New Testament and in the Old, scriptures show us this, "I'm blown away by what you think of me" mentality. This perspective of how we should see ourselves is echoed by a variety of followers of God. People that over and over and over again call themselves a bondservant. In the New Testament, Peter, Paul, James, Jude, John, even in the Old Testament, Moses, they define themselves in this way, a bondservant. When we look in Deuteronomy 15, we see this concept of a slave having the opportunity to go free after a period of 6 years. You'd expect that at that point, they would just jump at the chance. "I'm out of here." But there would occasionally be a slave who might not want to go. Maybe they had a hard time earning a living. The room and board that they had there was better than anything that they could find or create for themselves. Or maybe they had just grown comfortable with the master and his household over those 6 years, and they just didn't want to leave. And in that case, the Bible shows us a very special destiny for those individuals. In a symbolic act, the scriptures state that the master would take that servant who wants to stay and put them up against the doorpost of one of the doorpost of their house and take an instrument and drive a hole into their ear. They would pierce their ear in a very clear statement that they were going nowhere, that by that servant's desire, they were becoming fixed to that family and to that master for the rest of their lives. They were becoming a bondservant. When that tool was removed and they were no longer physically, literally stuck to the house, they would then symbolically take an earring and place it in the lobe of that slave's ear, signifying that they could never be sold again, that they would be a servant who was permanently attached, bonded to the master, a bondservant. Those bondservants were trusted with the affairs of their master like no one else. They were treated as part of the family as they served. Does that define you? When you woke up this morning, were you thinking about the affairs that the master has entrusted to you? I think that it comes in waves for us, right? There's moments when we're just focused in as a follower of Jesus in what he desires for us to do. And then there's moments when we just kind of float around. And maybe that's you in this moment. And my prayer for you is that over the next few minutes, you get a clearer focus as a bondservant of Jesus Christ, the affairs that he has entrusted to you, and your next steps forward. To begin that process, I've asked a friend of mine, Christina, to come and join me. We're going to give you an example of some of those who are involved right now as bondservants of Jesus Christ. Christina has been a part of Reach Out Youth Solutions. That's an organization that is supported by Rock Point Church. She's been training and equipping and empowering youth leaders, youth parents, youth workers in the country of Ukraine for many years. She's been involved in that work, but when the war broke out, she was already planning to be on a trip to the United States, oddly, crazily, beautifully enough, and she had the opportunity to come here shortly after the war broke out, and she's been here since, and so she's good friend of mine. I'm thankful for you being a part of our worship experience today. Thankful for your presence in our church and the opportunities that you've had to share in different environments here already. And I just wanted to give you an opportunity to share with our people some of what's happening there in Ukraine now. I know you've gotten some recent reports even, but just also give us a picture of what bondservants of Jesus Christ look like in Ukraine today.
Good morning, church. It's such a great privilege and honor to be with you. And I want to share about like a friend of mine, Sasha. Like I think she is a great picture of bondservant or a worker for Christ. And the matter of fact, when Randy came back in 2019 to Ukraine, she was attending that conference. It was a big national conference in Ukraine we conducted. And she said to me afterwards that, you know, when Randy spoke and preached, this word just like stood in, like for me, compassion. Jesus, excuse me, I'm stealing something from you here now.
Go ahead.
Compassion. And she said, like when Jesus was moved by compassion, he healed people, he delivered them, he fed them, he gave something like taste of heaven to them. And it's interesting because like compassion, if we like think about like Hebrew word, it's like full of mercy. And the same word that shows like mercy in Hebrew is the same word of womb. So the same like attitude that mom has towards her child, when she can give compassion, she can give healing, comfort, this is what God gives to us. And they right now, you know, in Ukraine, like, you know, with this crazy war that is going on, and we prayed and prayed millions of times. The war been over, but now I will tell you that it's just like the range of a new pace in this war. And Sasha, with her youth team and church, she is delivering food packages to those who are in need, to those who are refugees in the eastern part of Ukraine. And they live in a small town where small enough, but to have thousands of refugees. And that people who left their houses, there's no more houses, there's no more lifestyle that they lived before. And they want to be representatives of God's kingdom, who will bring compassion, who will bring food, and who will bring hope and prayer and healing. And, you know, like, it's so beautiful because church has an opportunity to be his servant, bond servant, worker in this place. And that's how the world will know him, by love that we have towards this world and towards each other. And love is in action.
So you've got Sasha, the story of one who is leading those efforts as as a youth leader in that town with those refugees flooding in the east, actually. The town is in the east.
Right.
So it's kind of in this moment where there is a lot of conflict, but that town has been saved.
Exactly.
And it's become a refuge for people who can't even really get to the west. But we also have workers that are in the west as well. And our church has been partnering with them. Many have given to help those efforts there. And what are some of the things they're doing there in that area?
So in the West, like, and I'm very thankful, church, for your finances and prayers, because like people were able to host over something thousands of refugees and were able to help them to go through the borders to get to the, you know, safest place in Europe, or just like to stay and find the refuge. And they were able to purchase the van and go to these crazy places like Bucha and other in Kyiv region to deliver humanitarian aid, to deliver prayer, to deliver books. People are, you know, so hungry for the word and for love, because like when you're desperate, when you lost everything, like, you know that God is in control, and church brings God to people.
And there's
right?
a lot of people who don't know God in those moments, and what we're hearing is that the church is being flooded with people with a lot of questions. So this is a great opportunity for the gospel to be presented to this country that's in desperate
need. And I sense it's the same like in Book of Acts, you know, when we are so like honored and we just like, yeah, they've done so much, but we don't take this fact that it was under Roman Empire, and that probably they have the war situation as we did and we do right now still in Ukraine.
Mm. Wow. I want to encourage you, church, to be praying for Christina as she's here in the States still, and also for just our team, the reach out team that's there, that's involved in a lot of different aid projects all around the country. And you're right, it's still happening. It may not be on the front pages of our news in this moment,
and
but there's a lot of need.
And it's understandable, you know, yeah. because people are getting tired of hearing, like, we are getting used to hear bad news. We are getting used to live in the war. And we kind of, yeah, we know, you know, first time it's just a huge wave, and we are willing to show the compassion. And then we kind of get along with our lives. It's just like normal life happens. Mm. But I'm just like, want to tell you that it is still happening.
Thank you, Christina, very much for sharing with us today. Christina was helping me a little bit with my sermon prep on the stage in the last service here, which is always helpful. She speaks English, Hebrew, Russian, and Ukrainian, and she was saying in Hebrew, bondservant is worker. And so as we're processing this word and we're thinking about it in our terms, whether we're in Ukraine or Flower Mound, are we waking up each morning and saying with great joy, I'm so ready to serve God. I'm ready to be a worker. I'm ready to give. I'm ready to love. And then if we are, for what purpose? Is it to gain a special spot in heaven, or is it to gain more favor with the Father? I want to help us with those questions with a little bit of a memory lane walk as we go to this place that's very familiar in the scriptures. When an expert in the law asked Jesus this question, what must I do to inherit eternal life? And you know what Jesus' response was? His response was, Listen, do things like cross training and make sure that you, you serve at least once a year in like a food packing event like Feed the Hunger, and sign up to do a meal train once a month. You do those things, you are gonna, and you're like, hey, don't step on toes here. Those are good things. They are. They are good. But they come out of the overflow of something that Jesus spoke of before he got to there. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind. We are reminded here that eternal life is ours because of the relationship that we can have with God, not because we can do enough to earn a ticket to heaven. No. And you see, the second part here, he continues on. Jesus says, to love your neighbor as yourself. And that's not a contradiction. And that does represent all of those things I just discussed. As we love children and love those who physically need a warm meal when it's dropped by their house and physically have the opportunity to circle up with a group of teens in the other building as a small group leader. Yes, all of that is true, and it's not a contradiction, but it's an action that occurs out of the overflow of a heart that is captivated by the love of God. And the first question, maybe above all others, is, has your heart been captivated by the love of God? That's the beginning. Because you see, someone who is serving the master, whose heart is captivated by him, what happens? They recognize, they understand that they are entrusted with his affairs as well as being a part of his family. So that the man, he pushes Jesus a little bit farther, and we're not sure exactly why he continues to push, but he says, so who's my neighbor? And we don't know exactly all the reasons why, but we do have in Jesus' response a look into the mission of one person who is fully devoted. And it's in this parable that is so very common, so commonly known. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, Jesus says, when he fell into the hands of robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happening to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, he passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled. Okay, so let's take a minute and focus in on this hero of the story, right? This Samaritan. You've heard this story, many of you, since you were a small child. Verse 33, and when he, the Samaritan, saw him being the beat up guy lying half dead on the road, right? He took pity on him. Real simply, he had eyes that were opened and a heart that had compassion. His eyes were opened. His heart was softened. Softened hearts. In a word, the mission began with compassion. And this part of the story reminds me of that part of Jesus' ministry in Matthew chapter 9. You remember he was healing these two blind men and a mute, demon-possessed guy, and the religious crowd criticized him and accused him of receiving powers from the evil one, right, and from the devil. But he continues to teach and to heal and to move through the crowd. And then Matthew describes Jesus in this way. Right after all of that occurs, this is what Matthew actually says in verse 36. He says, when he saw the crowds, he had compassion on them because they were harassed and helpless like sheep without a shepherd. When he saw, he had compassion. And so the question was asked, well, how long does this missions parade of people go on the stage? I mean, it's been happening for quite a while, Randy. And my answer is, I wish it just never stopped. Now, maybe that's because I'm the global missions pastor. But actually, I think it's because when our eyes see, whenever we take that bag out there in the lobby and go home and fill it up and bring it back every month, whenever we walk out into the lobby and we see that missions table and we see what's laid out there, as you'll see today, whenever you hear somebody's story, when you go online and you see what's happening there and who's being supported, whenever you hear the opportunities week in and week out of how you can be connected all around here, locally and statewide and internationally, you know what all that does? It just allows our eyes to be opened so that in the openness, We're moved with compassion. And Jesus is filled with compassion for what he sees. He's allowed himself to be immersed into the sea of needs. Did he close his eyes and walk by quickly? No, he did not. Was he numb to it? I mean, he'd already seen so much. He'd already healed so many. No, he was not numb to the moment. He still had compassion. He allowed himself to see the need, and he was connected to his Father, God, in such a way that he was able to have his Father's heart for what was going on around him. And that's why we see he saw and he took pity. He was in that moment. We also see in the Samaritan's life that he got dirty hands. He saw and that moved him to compassion, but he also got down and he got dirty hands, and the key word there is action. Verse 34, he went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine. It's doubtful, you see, that what he did was he did not walk into that moment with a first aid kit from Johnson & Johnson, some government-approved COVID test, some hand sanitizer. He didn't have those things, right? No. At the end of this whole ordeal, what we find is he just had maybe a small portion of his clothing and a willing heart. And he didn't just call 911 in that moment. He became 911. And the reality of living out this life of a bondservant is that when we do, it is a call to action and it does get messy. And the main reason for that is because we are messy. And so when somebody calls you, like somebody called me not long ago and said, hey, can we go have lunch? And I look at my calendar on my phone and I go, yeah, that's not going to happen. And then God kind of taps me and says, that's a busy week, Randy. You're right. But you know what? You're not busy for this moment. You're not too busy for this moment. I think that in that moment, the Samaritan got dirty hands because people's lives are messy. And whether it's working through a marital challenge in a small group or over a lunch, or whether it's walking through a high school student's temptations in a small group as their small group leader, whatever the case may be, we're called into mess. And then finally, you see, we're already in the third point. I mean, you may get to lunch. Who knows when? This is good. He had an open wallet. I realize that doesn't start with H. We had heart and hands, and a good pastor would have found an H word for wallet. I just couldn't find it. But let's just say in a word, it's sacrifice. Continuing in verse 34, pouring on oil and wine, then he put the man on his own donkey and took him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 silver coins and gave them to the innkeeper. Look after him, he said. Stopping cost him. I don't know that it's going to be necessarily financial for you, but the resources of time and energy and money in this story right here were spent. Earlier, there were 2 other guys that walked right past, and their journey cost them nothing. And they did not get messy. And they were religious people. But they chose to remain detached, keeping their eyes detached from their hearts, keeping their hands detached from the mess, keeping their wallets detached from the need. But the Samaritan, you know what he did? He moved in and moved from the temptation of being detached to the reality of being devoted. So how do we do that? How do we live this life, this bondservant life, fully devoted, serving the master, involved in his affairs? And do we even know what his affairs are? This part of this purpose of this parable, I believe, Jesus is showing us is how to engage in this messy world. And maybe a fresh way for us to look at this parable is just to be reminded again or taught even for the first time of the Samaritan himself. Because you see, it almost comes off initially as like this bad bar joke, right? I mean, it's like, okay, Jesus, we've all heard the story about the priest and the rabbi and the preacher, right? But that's not the way that the story went. As a matter of fact, the story Jesus was telling was more like, okay, so there's this priest and there's this rabbi and there's this terrorist. And you're going, what? And maybe the audience in that moment, that was the moment. That's the moment, I think, when Jesus was saying the parable that he knew he had their attention. It's kind of like now. It's like, okay, I've heard the whole story of the Good Samaritan, and when Randy's finished, then we can go. No, all of a sudden, the terrorist word shows up in the vocabulary, and everybody's focused in, just like back then. Because the relations between the Samaritans and the Jews had not been good for centuries. Jews had considered the Samaritans idol-worshipping, pagan-marrying half-breeds. Other historical documents show that in the not-so-distant past between AD 6 and 9, somewhere in the vicinity of when Jesus was just a very, very small child, you see, there was a group of Samaritans that entered into the temple court at midnight at Passover. And all over the temple, they defiled it with human remains. And the Jews had not forgotten that. So when they hear Jesus speaking about a Samaritan, they would anticipate maybe the story being more like the Samaritan being helped by somebody else. But all of a sudden, the terrorist is the hero. Well, that doesn't make any sense, Jesus. I mean, but he's the one rejected. He's the one in need of mercy himself. You're right. And so serving out of the strength of who he thinks he is, he can bring what? To this moment, he can bring nothing. He recognizes his own weaknesses. And in that, he too is messy. He too is imperfect. And in too, that is the subject of our lives. That we desperately need Jesus to work through us, to live out his gospel in the world. So our calling is also one of jumping into action, not because of who we are, but because of who he is. And by the way, what we don't see in this story at the end is, we don't see the Samaritan getting written up with the Humanitarian of the Year award. We don't see anything being given to him. We only see him being recognized by this half-dead guy and this nameless innkeeper. That's all we see. And so there's a final question this morning. The final question is, what is it keeping us from living the life of a bondservant? If you know Jesus as Savior, then what he's called you to is that life. You see, the life of one that's got their ear pinned to the doorpost, his doorpost. So what does that mean for us? What does that mean for you on this Memorial Day weekend where we're about to go and barbecue? What does it mean for us for the rest of this year as we walk through all this inflation and all this difficulty that we experience in our country with all this racial strife and political challenges and all the other things that consume us? And we go, whoa, wait a minute. Bigger than all of that is that there is a God who loves me. And he's called me into the mess. So how do I do that? How do I bring life and healing and hope to a lost and dying world here in Flower Mound and all over the world, even into those red and orange places on the map you saw earlier? We have to get past the lies. You see, one of the lies is entitlement. It's this lie of entitlement, this arrangement that I have in my mind that says it's all about what I get out of the equation. I mean, can't I just come here and sit and experience a worship service a couple of times a week? Can't I just tune in whenever I want to and then be done with it? I mean, this is good for my kids. I'm glad they're here. I'm glad they're being taught. I'm glad they're in this moment. I'm so glad for a church like this that I can sit and be because I've already done so much. You see, and we might not say those words out loud, but deep down inside, it's so easy for us to fall into the temptation of the American mindset mentality of entitlement. because I deserve it. Maybe, though, there's another lie. It might be the lie of I'm unnecessary, of irrelevance. It's the idea that my role really wouldn't make that much of a difference anyway. I mean, you may be sitting there thinking, have you seen me with kids, Randy? I mean, come on. You may be thinking, listen, I don't speak four languages like Christina. Can I just tell you, I'm the global missions pastor here. I also lead an international organization that trains youth pastors all over the world in lots of cultures with lots of languages. And you know what I have a grasp on? Barely English. I am a product of the reality that God can use you anywhere, all over the world. All for Him. Not for your glory, not for my glory, but so that He can show off in our inadequacies. The truth is that there are people right around you right now that have what you need. They have been uniquely placed in your sphere of influence for God to have your connection to them. I don't know what that looks like. I don't know, maybe that looks like your neighborhood. Maybe that looks like some people in this church in a small group. Maybe that looks like an international mission trip you hop on with us to Mexico or India this summer. We're headed there. We'll talk to me if you want to go. Talk to me if you want to go to Cuba. We've got some incredible trips planned to spread His light and love to some dark places around our world. It may not look like that, though. It might look like just giving through prayer. We've got these pages, and they're so cool. They're representing things that are global that our church supports, things that are local and statewide. And somebody last week picked up one of these from the table. You know what they told us they did with it? They took four of them, actually, and they laminated them. And now they're using them as placemats at home so they have a specific person or ministry they can pray for every time they eat. That's cool. Sign that person up for marketing here. Great idea. I don't know what that looks like, but I do know this. We are all capable. And the reason why is because God has given you everything you need already to live the life of one to accomplish what He has in your sphere of influence for His glory that's related to His affairs. The story of the Good Samaritan would have looked markedly different had it just been based on convenience. It's just not convenient for him. What if he had walked away like the other two? It would have looked so very different if he had just based that whole moment on his professional skills as an EMT, because he didn't have any. He had some oil, maybe a little wine, a little piece of cloth from his garment, and a couple of dollars. You know what he had? He had five loaves and two fish, basically. And in that moment, he provided the miracle of hope and healing. And it was not based on his abilities or his attributes or his talents or his personality. It wasn't based on how long he had been a believer or how much he had connected at the temple or in the church. It was based on none of that. Because at the end of the day, God doesn't need us. He doesn't need what we bring to the table. What he says is, I'm inviting you into this. I've chosen you to be a bondservant of mine, to give love and life and hope and healing to a lost world that I want to invite to a grand party. And you see, you've already got the Evite. Now what I'm inviting you to is to live the life of one with the earring. Are you ready to go to Evite? Yes, I received it. To now the earring, I'm pinned to the doorpost, because that's the invitation I have for you today. And yes, it takes a step, and it's not easy, because it does involve sacrifice. It does involve action. It does involve me opening my eyes and seeing with compassion everything around me. And so in my prayers and in my giving and in all that I am, I say, God, use this, whatever this is, for your glory. Open our eyes, God. Pierce my ear. Fill me with your compassion. God is not finished. For some of you, you feel like, oh, I've lived a lot already, and now I'm just trying to get my kids through or my grandkids too or whatever. I was thinking about some of the people on this page. I was thinking about some of the people, we've mentioned them before, like Bill Pearson, Bill and Peg Pearson. I can't imagine. I mean, you know where they serve? They serve in the DRC. You know when they started there as missionaries? They did not have a family history of missionary in DRC. You know what they had a history of? Business in USA. And Bill retired and became a missionary, and now he's planted 5 churches. But you know what? It would have been so easy for him to say, I don't have the pedigree of a missionary, and I've already lived most of my life. I think about Brett Medlin. I've mentioned him to you before as well. He serves and is resourced by our church in Cambodia. As a student, made a lot of bad choices. Made a lot of bad choices with drugs, was kicked out of a youth home 2 different times. I mean, a complete mess. And if Brett were to stand here right now before you, he would say, you know what? If I just based my experience of my past on my future decision to serve him, it would have made no sense to me. Because I wasn't the ideal Sunday school kid. I wasn't the one who was walking down the aisle and saying, I surrender all at the age of 14 to follow him in missions. No, as a matter of fact, Brett was a mess, and God got his hands dirty with a bunch of people who wouldn't let him go and picked him up out of the ditch, and he builds water wells for a Cambodian group of people in that country that everybody had forgotten about except God. And he said, let's see, I'm gonna draw this connection to Brett, who feels like everybody's forgotten about him, and pull him into these people in Cambodia who feel like everybody's forgotten about them, and I'm gonna pull it all together and show them how very much I love them all. That's God. So we come in here with all kinds of excuses and past and yuck and stuff. And God says, whoa, hold on, wait a minute, hold on. I don't remember all those excuses being given. Not by the Samaritan. And so this morning, are you ready? Are you ready to move from the temptation of being detached to being devoted? Of just having the Evite in your hand to having the earring in your ear? Because if you are, that's the life he's really invited you to. For many of us in the room, you know it, you're living it, you've lived it. Let's do it together. Father, may we give and go and pray and serve and love now. God, may we step away from that temptation of having detached eyes from what's happening around us. But God, instead, may we step into the compassion. God, it's so simple for us to walk away with detached hands and not involve ourselves in the mess. Father, it's so simple for us sometimes to just be detached from our resources to the needs that are around us. But God, in this moment, I just want to thank you for reminding us, for reminding me, for reminding those of us in the room who have said yes to you as Savior and King, that you also consider us and have called us into a life of bondservant, caring about the affairs of your house and invited to give evites to everybody we can. So God, even in this moment, there are many in this room who are hurting, feeling like they're on the side of the road. And maybe they got all dressed up in the appearance that it's all fine. But Father, may this moment, may this church, may these people be the help and healing hands that you have provided for that person today. May they not leave, God, until they come and seek prayer so that they can discover yet again that your body is here. That we are about your affairs here. Father, I thank you for this church. I thank you for the mission that this church has all over the world. But God, I'm thankful that you've brought us to this place in this church where we also care about the needs in this room in this moment. So God, meet us in these moments. As we listen to you, as we worship, as we receive and speak and sing about the new mercies that you have for us, God.